You ask KB's you? Listening. She's driving off. She's like, God dang, that's sexist.
No comment.
It's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head-to-head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Kristen is off, as I've said all week. She'll be back on Monday. She's excited. She said she missed me, so I'll take her on her word. It really should be the Political Power Hour, 90 minutes, not an hour, right?
Political Power Hour and a half.
KB would have enjoyed the pregame discussion we had.
Oh, it was hot.
It was hot.
Joseph Pecky, Democratic strategist. Bill McCosh on the right side of the aisle, conservative, with credentials. Both of these gentlemen are here because they're smart and they can communicate their thoughts on where we're at on the subject of politics. We were talking before, there's like a lot of things we could discuss, and we'll try to get to a lot of them.
We could do Political Power 3 hours.
Yeah,
today.
Easy.
So if the midday show's okay, we could probably just take some of their time. All right, so we'll just reference back, because this story leads to a lot of other things. The White House Correspondents Association, they had their dinner, which was quickly broken up by a shooter. Individual comes in. I don't know that he didn't injure anyone, because the officer smartly had his vest on. But that ended that debate. Initial reaction to what is almost an everyday intrusion of mass violence, gun violence, into everything. Now a White House correspondence dinner is subject to the same rules of the road when it comes to that.
These are scary moments. When I first got word that something had happened, I do the thing I don't really do anymore, which is I went and turned on cable news. I almost religiously do not watch cable news anymore. And as I'm doing it, you just kind of can't help but wonder, like, there was a heinous 8 kids were killed in Shreveport, Louisiana, like a few days before, and it doesn't get a fraction of the coverage. And so I do think that there's something a little bit broken about the way that we cover violence in this country. And thankfully, the security design worked. And I just want people to understand, like, it's not just that this intended gunman didn't get a shot off at anyone who, you know, in that ballroom. It's not just that he didn't get in the room. He was on an entirely different floor.
Right.
And the Secret Service has a mission that has been described in the past as zero fail. You either stop would-be assassins or you do not. In this case, they did. Obviously, the mags were breached for those of us who have been at lots of these VIP type events with protectees. You know how serious those folks are. And I'm sure that they are reviewing policies and procedures to ensure that nobody ever even gets that close again. But this was not what I would say is a close call. And so for that, I give thanks and gratitude to everybody in law enforcement and the Secret Service. All the, you know, they do a good job, and it's a really, really tough job because the bad guys, the crazy lunatics like this knucklehead, they only have to be right once. And that's, you know, that's a tough job.
What do you think, Bill? I mean, this, again, another intrusion into things that have just kind of gone on over our time. We have these dinners. Presidents come. This president, I think it's the first time he came as president. He's been there before as a guest.
Yeah.
Your reaction?
It's concerning, right? That the volume and the temperature in the country can't seem to come down. And both sides have their hands on the dials, and they could help with that. And for whatever reason, we choose not to. But the most concerning thing to me, there's a couple points I want to raise, was the Secret Service agent who was shot. We still do not know if it was actually the gunman that shot him or one of his partners from the Secret Service. And we're going to know that maybe as soon as today. And that is really disturbing to me, that Secret Service agents not only drew but shot and all missed him, but may have shot one of their own guys. That is deeply disturbing. The thing that I found really impressive about it was kind of like DC prom afterwards. In the White House press room, everybody's in ball gowns and black tie, and so was the president, and a good share of his cabinet was standing right next to him.
A lot of smirking going on.
It was awkward. I thought for Trump, the tone was perfect. He handled that night really, really well, and it was an opportunity to sort of change the landscape a little bit politically, in my opinion. There was one poll shortly thereafter, the Harris X poll, that had the generic ballot at 50-50. I'll admit that could be an outlier, but they're generally a pretty good pollster. But I thought Trump did a really good job that night. And my say something nice will be about a commentator who I also was impressed with on the Democratic side that night.
When I saw the presser that they did, I didn't like the sort of the smiling that was happening away from the president's. I think he started well, but he turned into a ballroom conversation. This event's never going to be held in a White House ballroom, I don't think.
Correct.
Because it's a press association. They're not going to hold events in the very place where government does their work, I don't think.
Oh, I think they will, because it'll be the most secure building in D.C.
But it's also a fraction of the size.
This is the first one where the press was actually involved in it, right? When he was the attempt in Butler, there were some press traveling with him, of course, a pool. The golf course, there were none. Right. So it was just kind of him. This was the first time the press sort of lived through this.
I've been in the building where this shooting happened. U.S. Conference of Mayors. We had many. I saw presidents speak there. I saw vice presidents, CEOs. It's at that spot because it can handle massive attendance.
Right. Yeah.
The ballroom, correct me if I'm wrong, is not going to be anywhere near that big.
It would be a third of the size.
So I'm going to ask you, Bill. What offended me is, let's not take this and make it into a PR campaign for the ballroom. Well, my opinion.
In Rahm Emanuel's words, never let a crisis go to waste.
I reminded you of that this week. You're welcome.
You did. Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break. Lots to talk about.
But the obsession with the ballroom is absurd.
It is a little
And
odd.
The history on it, going back to when Obama was president and Trump called Axelrod and said he wanted to do the ballroom. This is like, Trump doesn't want anything in life as much as he wants a new ballroom.
Well, he's redesigned the White House. I mean, that property, I mean, now there's a black granite walkway outside. You see that?
Saw that yesterday.
Paved over Jackie Onassis's Rose Garden.
Yeah, I mean, it's transformational. I would argue he's finally, this is my opinion, he's understanding he's not going to run again, but he's going to put a stamp on everything that remains on that property for time immemorium if they let him. That's my take. Quick break. Bill, Joe, point taken.
Brew Crew Tuesdays are back on May 12th.
Curio sends it deep to left, and there she goes!
Catch the Brewers on local TV as they play the San Diego Padres.
Yelich launches one deep right center field. Forget about it. Oh, my goodness, third deck.
Brew Crew Tuesdays are presented by Construction Business Group. Tune in May 12th at 6:40 on Fox 6 in Milwaukee, or check your local listings to watch the game.
Hey, it's Salute to Service Month now. May is here. Yes, I need your nominations. Text the word SALUTE, S-A-L-U-T-E, to 855-616-1620. First responders, you define it. You tell me their story. You tell me the name. Tell me where they work, how they impacted your life, how they saved your life, changed your life. 855-616-1620. Send a nomination in, and then we'll do the rest. We'll pick the winners for Heroes Week. Thanks to Waterstone Bank and all our great partners for making this possible. It's one of the favorite times of the year for us on this show. We're actually up for a WBA award this weekend for one of last year's honorees. So I'll tell you about that on Monday. But I need your help. The nomination period ends May 8th. Get those in, 855-616-1620, or go to WTMJ.com. Click on the Salute to Service banner. It'll take you to the nomination page. Get them in quickly. Little Thin Lizzy on a Friday. Rest in peace, Phil Lynn, our lead singer. Died a long time ago. Great song.
Dropping knowledge over
there. Oh, yeah. I'm just a radio DJ. You
know? Showing off his own radio or Jeopardy chops.
Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky. A real king came to Washington, D.C. this week, right?
He did.
What'd you think? What's your thoughts about that
visit? So, I'm not a big monarch guy, but...
And I am a no-kings guy. Let's just be really
clear. Yeah, no surprise there.
But it was pretty cool. And my youngest son got a chance to be on the South Lawn to... It's the first king to visit the United States since King George in 1939. So it's been 87 years.
Well, we also had a queen knowledge. For like 75 of those
years.
Well,
yeah, we did. Sort of made that the reality.
We did. But it was a cool thing in that respect. And, you know, it appeared that there is a genuine warm relationship between the king and queen and the president and the first lady. And to the point where they came back and actually bartered with them on some tariffs on whiskey, and they got those removed. So I thought it was cool. I thought the king's speech to Congress was was pretty good.
All right, so he mentioned the Magna Carta in his speech, and you know, that separation of powers argument that we sort of, you know, brush off now. What'd you think about that? Very specific. Was it a directive to Congress to wake the hell up, or what was he doing there?
Well, it's interesting because Joe and KB and I had an offline communication about this. Who all was at the state dinner? All three branches were at the state dinner. The president and his cabinet were there. Mike Johnson and Majority Leader Thune were there. I think there were Democratic senators there as well. But there were also six members of the Supreme Court who were there, which I thought was not the right optic. Truthfully, maybe the John Roberts should have been there. I don't know, for a state dinner, but I don't think that's the right look.
Everybody wants to meet royals.
I don't care
who you are. Huh?
I don't get it. I don't get the obsession with the monarchy. I don't get it.
You know, that's my homeland, right?
I do.
Yeah.
But I thought you were American.
I am American first.
Oh.
But I was born in England.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
So you have a little allegiance to the king?
Some people say I have royal blood in me.
Oh, we got to get him a crown for next week.
Mark the tape on that one. That's a good promo.
Listen, state visits are also a big deal. I would like to think that Trump was listening when King Charles was talking about the importance of NATO.
He was pretty strong on those words.
He was.
When the king was talking about, you know, the role of America on the world stage in terms of the example we set. And what American democracy has meant to the world. But the policy choices of this administration continue to suggest otherwise. Right. And so I thought the king was subtle in some of his digs. You had to really kind of read between the lines. Right. That, you know, when Trump says, if it weren't for us, you Brits would be speaking German. And the king responds with, well, if it wasn't for us, you might all be speaking French. You know, you got to kind of know your world history there to get the subtleties of the digs.
Yeah.
But
it was an educated speech.
Yeah, it was.
It totally was.
It was.
A lot of history, but also a recognition of what's happening in the world that these two countries, vital players, are involved in.
It might be a lesson, too, because he was able to make his points at 40,000 feet, right? He never personalized it. Correct. He never mentioned Trump by name. All of his digs, if they were digs, were subtle, and you had to think about them.
So statecraft can be practiced in ways other than like a sledgehammer, like your guy
does?
It
can, and no social media needed.
How about that?
No social media needed.
Explain it, since we're talking about kings. So the president, apparently on CBS, I think it was Norah O'Donnell, said he's not a king.
Yeah.
Okay. And the White House this week said there was two kings in together. So what's the disconnect?
They're there? Trolling. They're trying. So,
well, I know the
right,
answer.
Like, it's, you know, you call your wife your queen sometimes, and right, like, I get the like pop culture reference of referring to someone as a king, but they're just trolling. And I don't think that's becoming of the office of the presidency.
I don't either.
But in terms of the troll o-meter from this White House, I'm pretty low.
Pretty low on the scale.
I'm still a little bit more concerned about online threats to end a civilization tonight than I am about a picture of Trump and Charles and calling it two kings. Who cares?
We're going to get to all of that stuff. After the break, did you hear the shutdown ended?
Hard to believe.
What in the... All right, quick break. Point taken.
And we'll never be
This is like a real music station now.
What was that?
I don't recognize that. I have no idea what this is.
It's Lord singing We Will Never Be Royal, because we were just talking about the royal family.
Well, thank you, Joseph.
Dang.
I got you, Jazz.
So Jazz is flying a plane way above our heads.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just call me the explainer in chief.
Wow, Joseph Pecky. All right, so.
The kid's bringing the heat today.
Now I feel dumb.
The old guys are taking it high and tight.
Whatever happened today is when producers give their hosts a heads up. Hey, this is coming next. Didn't get any of that, so I look dumb.
You were spelling something for her.
I was. I didn't. Did I finish spelling?
And also not using the talkback button, so I could not hear you.
Team effort over here.
All right. Anyway, so the shutdown's over.
What shut down?
Government. Who won?
Oh, weird.
Who won, Bill?
Weird. It's so weird that for weeks and weeks and weeks, Democrats said, we will fund the Coast Guard and the Secret Service and everything but ICE until you make these reforms. And multiple times the Senate sent it over and the House wouldn't do it. And then in the end, what did we get? We got an end to the shutdown,
that funds everything except for ICE, exactly what Democrats have been saying they would do throughout the 76 days, I think was the...
78, I think.
Okay, right? Like, so there's no winners when government doesn't work. But Democrats held the line. So for all you Democrats out there who say the Democratic Party doesn't have a backbone and doesn't do anything, they stuck to what they wanted, and that was the deal that just ended up getting done. Now, I turn to my friend Bill, and I go, what changed on the Republican side? What did Mike Johnson get for this?
That's the question.
How is he spinning it as a win?
Well, Democrats didn't win, and my friend Joe is half right about what Democrats wanted. They were willing at one point to fund everything except ICE. And then they wanted all these reforms, none of which are in the final package.
Which is why the ICE funding isn't in the final package.
Right.
Well, ICE is going to pass separately under reconciliation, which only requires 51 votes. So Republicans, I think, are going to do that next week.
But couldn't they have done that like earlier?
Yeah, they could have done it 70 days ago.
And sadly, that's the state of government we're in right now, where they can't even do the most basic things. Right. I mean, shutting down government to get your way is not the right way to run a government. That's for
government
sure.
Government by temper tantrum.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who's in charge. If it's Republicans or Democrats, it's not the way to run the railroad. But I think the precedent is now set or reconfirmed, and it will continue for some time.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The president said many times in the past few months. How many days was it? 78 or 79. Okay. He wouldn't sign a bill unless the ICE funding was in there. He signed the bill. It's the shutdown's over. What?
He blinked,
right?
And if this is what Republicans choose to do, it means one less reconciliation package available for more tax giveaways to billionaires. And I think that too is a win.
That's a talking point. I hate when you say
that's what they did with the last one. Do you need me to remind you about the $7.8 billion tax break that Jeff Bezos and Amazon got?
I believe everyone should pay their fair share in taxes, including billionaires. But when you say stuff like that, it's just you throw these out as talking points. Billionaires,
it's a true thing that happened.
They pay taxes.
Did your taxes go down on your return this year?
I don't have to go look.
I didn't. Mine didn't. I made more money, but
I don't think mine did either. I always seem to be. I'm in the gray area all the time.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. You know,
I'm not either.
I got a nice refund, but. What $7.8 billion is the tax break that Jeff Bezos got? It's just a fact. It's not a talking point.
I'm not arguing with
what's your
what
refund
you're
nicer
I'm,
than
just
the year
way
before?
You say it. It's
yeah, but that's because I had a worse year in business.
Oh. Well, hey, that's honesty. That's honesty.
Yeah.
All right, we got the war in Iran, energy prices, gas prices. I mean, no one's holding up those. Well, Tom Tiffany's getting memed out of his mind because he did that one with what, 2-something?
249.
Now it's 4 whatever.
449 is what KB just paid.
Yeah, she just paid 449, but 429 is the state average.
We got Say Something Nice. We got Grab Bag. What else we got? Who's going to win the Democratic nomination for governor in the state of Wisconsin?
You want to stick around for that conversation.
Yeah. That one's going to get fun.
That's must-hear radio, my friend. And you can actually watch on YouTube, too. So if that might be one you log on, you watch what we're doing. The war in Congress has ended. The shutdown is over. But the war in Iran has not ended. What are we, 60-plus days?
Well, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah, I suppose. Because according to the president, the war has been over for a long time. And J.D. Vance.
Well, the bombing ended on April 8th, right? So what has the last 3 weeks been?
Is a blockade not an act of war?
It's a... is it any different than any other penalties we put on countries, economic penalties?
Well, we're also blockading Cuba. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
And you've had the Iranian
fast
boats.
I know it's somebody wanted me to ask, Bill. Do you think the Department of Defense, I'm not doing the stupid thing that Hegseth does, is hiding either the number of injuries and fatalities among U.S. members of the military? There's been conversation about this.
I haven't heard that. I can't imagine that they would. I don't see the upside.
Basically, the scenario
of it.
It's been worse than they've said.
I think you have to be transparent about that.
You should be.
I don't think you can monkey around with this, and I don't think that they are. My understanding is that Secretary Hegseth acknowledged a 14th KIA while on the Hill this week. The number had been 13. Now it's 14 American troops who have been killed during this conflict. And we know that there are hundreds who have been injured. So I don't think that there's any funny business going on with those casualty counts. Okay. I don't
either.
I do think it is worth noting that the true cost of this war and the damage done to U.S. installations in the Middle East was not clear at the onset. and is now becoming clearer. There was some reporting this week by Reuters and others that the damage to those bases and installations is far more significant than originally let on. I am not here to say that's a conspiracy or a cover up. There is, in the, you know, while the missiles are flying, you don't want to tell your enemy where you are vulnerable. I understand all of that. But when Secretary Hegseth goes to the Hill and finally acknowledges things like this has already cost $25 billion, my follow-up, if I was on that committee, would be, what are the costs going to be going forward to rebuild these installations and to replenish the munitions? The price tag on this thing is going to be a hell of a lot more than $25 billion.
Where does it stand today, do you think? We there are some ships getting through the Strait of Hormuz, but it has been disruptive in major import-export. Obviously, oil, energy, fertilizer, all that stuff has been impacted by this. Where is it at, do you think, today?
I'm going to use Joe's famous line, two things can be true. I personally, and I think there are a lot of people out there who support the goal of a denuclearized Iran. I think that is better for the world for that to happen.
I think that's a bipartisan argument.
Having said that, this is also a train wreck politically for Republicans. And the longer it goes on, the worse it's going to be. The fact that gas now nationally is $4.29 a gallon when, you know, sadly, Tom Tiffany's got a meme out there where he was bragging about it in January of this year where it was $2.49. Okay. $4.29 to $2.49. That's a 72% increase in 4 months. That's what voters care about. And ultimately, voters vote their pocketbook first. I've said week after week, I'll say it again this week, this has to get over sooner. Time is not an ally of the administration from a political standpoint. Maybe from a world long view standpoint, you could play this out for 4 or 5 months. But if you do, Republicans are going to get wiped out in November.
You know, again, I'm a Republican, but it is encouraging that I don't have to listen or read any more stupid posts about gas prices from Republicans who now have to hide from that fact that it's $4+ a gallon. They just shut up about it.
Yeah.
But they might want to ask the question, okay, so how are we fixing this? It's $4.19 in Oak Creek and $4.49 other.
I was in Chicago this week. It was $5.40.
Do you think the blue team is making a mistake by not having those stickers ready to go for the gas pumps with
you
Trump
did this?
Says, I did this? Because Republicans already would have had them if Biden was still president.
Maybe. I would say there are times when saying nothing is the right strategy. And if you look at Democratic numbers in any national poll, they are lower than Republicans. In every single poll, it doesn't matter. If that number on the gas pump is still in the fours in November, it's going to be a very blue year.
What's my old saying? You don't have to outrun the bear. Just got to outrun the other guy.
the slowest guy is running next to you. Okay, for the president, though, and I ask this in all sincerity, do you think he gives a crap how much people pay for gas?
I think he believes it will come down quickly, and he may be right about that. But the question is, how long can they take it, right? I mean,
gas is the one that gets everybody right.
The beatings will continue until the morale improves.
Yeah,
I mean,
right, yeah.
The fact that he now has Republicans going out there and saying things like, I just had it. It was, I think, Rick Scott, senator from Florida, saying it's terrible that gas prices are so high, but it's a cost I'm willing to bear. Well, sir, you're a billionaire. You can afford it. If you're making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year, 72%
increase. If you're a small landscaping company that uses trucks and mowers and things like that, that's real. That's coming out of your bottom.
I said this. I think I told this on the air the other day. I a volunteer director for a cemetery. For the first time ever, we paid a fuel surcharge for our landscape service to cut the grass. Yeah, first time ever. Because of these prices,
it's almost like someone was sitting here last week saying that the economic pain was just about to get even more pronounced.
And the truth is, Iran may be facing more economic pain than we are, but U.S. voters don't care about that.
No,
right?
But we should care that Europe and Asia are facing even more pain than we are. When you have European airlines canceling thousands of flights because jet fuel prices have gone up even more than gasoline, there is a global economic impact that American voters may not understand or grasp, but it also is bad for the long-term health and stability of the world.
But maybe it doesn't matter if you just redraw the line so you can't lose an upcoming election.
Well,
we'll get to that after the break. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, point taken. Texter says, Steve, Bill, and Joe, thank you for a great conversation. We do it every Friday. Kristen will be here.
It's usually better because Kristen's here.
Looks better anyway. Yeah. You actually... KB's listening. She's driving off. She's like, God dang, that's sexist.
No comment. All right. It is better when she's here. And the show is more. Somebody asked me this question the other day. It's more fun to do it when you have someone to talk to.
Yeah.
Not that I don't.
Thank goodness you got us to talk to.
Right. Yeah. Because I dig monologizing, if that's a word. I just love it. But some people, like, as my wife sometimes says, I need less Steve right now. Honestly, God, the hand goes
up.
You're
up here. I need you down here.
The Heisman.
I need a little less Steve. Not hashtag more Steve. I need less Steve.
Don't give my better half any ideas.
Yeah, a little bit less of that. All right. The Supreme Court weighed in 6-3. No surprise. Conservatives versus liberals. Louisiana said, not going to happen. So this is a win for Republicans leading into the next big elections.
Well, it's probably two election cycles, but what they did was they reinterpreted Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act to say that you cannot discriminate based on race, which has been the practice for the last 60 years. And Rick Eisenberg was on your show, and I thought I explained it really well.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically said there can't be any discrimination as it relates to redistricting. What it means politically is potentially a pickup of at least 12 seats for Republicans. That does not include the four that Ron DeSantis is going to sign into law in Florida today. The four in Florida negate whatever gain might be made in Virginia. I still think the Virginia Supreme Court is going to throw that out. So it ends up being the potential over two cycles of a plus 16 for Republicans.
Just a specific point. Does it put too much stock in how people have voted in these areas before and not take into account how people are feeling about this state of the country now going into this election? So you can think that the lines are going to work for your side, but it may not play out that way.
It's 100% correct. And people have said that about Texas.
Yes.
The first one.
And
to
maybe
do this.
Florida. This could be the difference between a gerrymander and a dummymander is more complex
you
than
can't
we have
predict.
Time to get into. Yeah.
Right.
But the bottom line here is, as you said, I think it's in the text, there's no rules for this stuff anymore.
We're in full nuclear war between the parties, and I don't see it stopping. Many of these states are going to try and do this cycle, but some, like Georgia, the governor, Brian Kemp, said today, I can't get it done in time, so I'll do it for 28. So by 28, all of this will sort of be baked in the cake.
Among the things that really frustrate me about this is we go right to the battlefield and the battleground and what that means up and down for our politics of the moment. I think it is worth taking a step back. We are celebrating the 250th anniversary of this country this year. There is a strong case to be made that we did not in fact realize and become a true democracy until after the 1964 Civil Rights Act and 1965 Voting Rights Acts, that even the first Reconstruction after the Civil War did not get us there. It took franchising black and brown Americans. Those landmark pieces of legislation have now stood for 60 years. And as recently as 20 years ago, 2006, they were reauthorized by Congress, right? It's not like this was 60 years ago and now it's just on the books. It was a thing that needed to be reauthorized. And conservative Republicans like Jim Sensenbrenner, far-right Republicans for the time, championed reauthorization of this. Got 393 votes in the House and 98-0 in the Senate. And 20 years later, because Republicans, or not even all Republicans, the people who wanted the Voting Rights Act gone, said, well, we can't do it legislatively. We can't do it by executive fiat. We can only do this through the courts. And so they came up with a strategy and they poured millions of dollars into getting control of a court that would do what just happened, which is we have now arrived at a place where you can gerrymander based on partisanship, but you can't do it based on race. And I don't know, man, that just seems pretty screwed up.
On one of your points, though, something Hakeem Jeffries, the House Minority Leader, said this week is deeply disturbing and I think dangerous. And that is, he called the Supreme Court illegitimate. If you are listening to this program, there is no such thing as an illegitimate Supreme Court. Why? Because the one criteria it takes to be on that court is you must be confirmed by the United States Senate. All nine members of that court have been confirmed a United States Senate, therefore making them legitimate. The notion that they're illegitimate is ridiculous on its face.
I agree with that. And to the descending spiral of chaos that this is now going to lead to, this ain't just about drawn maps anymore. I guarantee you that the next time Democrats have the White House and control of both houses of Congress, they are going to enlarge the Supreme Court to match the number of district courts. There is going to be something, you know, done around real ethics on the Supreme Court. There will probably be term limits for Supreme Court justices. This has guaranteed that major reforms are coming to the Supreme Court the next time Democrats control everything.
I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to stay on this, but in a different way. I want you guys to think about this during the break. Given you said it's a nuclear war, given there's no rules, given it's just going to blow up in the worst possible way, how can that not be the storyline, the narrative, in the next 4 years? We'll discuss, see what they have to say about that. Bill and Joe on a Friday right here on Point Taken. Oh, again, we send it out every week. Just record that, put it on overtime, we're all done. We don't have to do anything else. All right, so I challenge you. Look, I don't like the fact that this redistricting, these ideas that we just blow all the rules up, we're abandoning what we at least thought was the right thing to do. We're just blowing it up. So I'm going to give you a minute each or so. Just, all right, how do we not do that? How do we fix what I think is most people would say is not going to be a fair process going forward?
Time just has to take care of some of this. I think I talked about this last week, that for every action in American politics, there is a reaction. For every spasm and period of chaos like the mid to late 60s through Watergate, there is a response in the next generation when things were a little more calm, right? I think you would agree with that. Even, you know, the Cold War era was a pretty rational time in our politics. Democrats controlled the House, Republicans controlled the presidency, and were winning overwhelmingly. So these things tend to like bounce back and forth. I think the next time Democrats have full control, you will see massive government reforms, not just to the Supreme Court. I think we need to add, you know, Senate seats. The U.S. territory should have
them. You call
them
reforms. Republicans say that's just overreach from the other side.
Okay, that's fine. But I'm going to call them reforms, and Bill can call them what he wants. I think if you enlarge the House, you take away some of the incentive structures around the gerrymandering. And if you have a period of government reform following a period of distrust in government and wild swings in the electorate, because remember, this is like the 21st century, we've talked about this in the past, has just swung back and forth. Like 11 of the 13 elections have been change elections. That at some point has to get to stability. And I think there will.
I don't know if it will.
I think it can.
All right, leave some time for Bill. Bill said,
I would say I'm opposed to all of the things that Joe said, because that's not who we are. That's what you do when you're losing. Your side's losing. If you can't convince voters of
the. You don't think we ever reform government? Come on.
I don't think we add four seats to the Supreme Court. I don't think we add members to the 435 member United States House of Representatives. I definitely don't think we add United States Senate seats. I'm opposed to all of that. I don't see any value in any of that. I think that changes who we are as a country. And I think that's what you do when your side can't convince the electorate that your side has better ideas for the country.
If your arguments are good, you win these elections, regardless of what the numbers are.
And that goes on both sides, right? We've introduced some dog candidates. Let's just take Wisconsin, for example. Five of the last six elections have been decided within 40,000 votes. I think it's actually 35,000 votes. I think Tammy Baldwin was the only one that was above that. I mean, we are a 50-50 state, but the polarization is not going away anytime soon, which means that this gerrymandering is going to continue and at least for the foreseeable future.
When we took over Greenland and Canada under Trump, were they ever going to get Senate seats?
No.
But that's American. I just think that's ridiculous to say it's not American. We've enlarged the size of the Congress before. We've enlarged the Senate over time. America is not a fixed item. It is constantly evolving.
All right. Do we take them over and make them states, Canada and Greenland, or how does that work? Or are we like Britain?
I don't think we should. It's Bill's guy who wants to do that.
Are we like Britain in the 19th century? We just like claim territory across the world. What are we doing? All right. Who is going to win this Democratic nomination for governor? We're going to dissect all these candidates, 15 candidates, whatever they got. They got seven, I think. Joe, Bill, News is next.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Kristen will be back on Monday, as I've said over and over again all week. She's having some fun. Where is she at? Appleton, Oshkosh, somewhere. She's giving a speech this morning. She had a very busy week. That girl, that woman, that smart woman, she never, like, vacations. Like, vacations.
No, they went to they had some party time over the weekend.
They were in Nashville, yeah. But then right back to work on a vacation week from this show. Hard working.
Get that bag, girl.
I know she's listening. She just sent us a picture from where she filled up. Didn't look like a quick trip to me. I want to know what gives.
Oh, ooh, fighting comments. All right, Joe, you're
the wasn't a Buc-ee's either.
No, thank God.
Mr. Sensory Overload.
Yeah, we got to talk about that, by the way. Off show. You're a Democrat. Democratic strategist. I get asked all the time, what's, like, none of these people are, like, emerging. We you know, Fran Hong's been talked about a lot because whatever polling that's out there and it's limited.
Oh, we're going to talk about the polling.
Oh, yes, we are.
She's hitting like 14%, and then like Mandela Barnes comes in at like 11, and then everyone's like 3 or under. So what's the magic, the secret sauce to make one of these candidates be the person for Dems to win the race?
First of all, they need to start campaigning.
Amen.
And I don't mean going around the state. They're all working hard, I get
that. Yeah, they're all over the place.
But in about 75 days... the first ballots will be cast, because that's about when the permanent absentee voters will get their mail-in ballots. And for everyone who is not named Mandela Barnes in this race, because Mandela's in first place, he's the front runner, that's been my answer every time you ask.
And you're basing that on?
He is well-known and well-liked among Democratic primary voters who will determine who our nominee is.
So is that historical evidence or feeling? Yes. What is it?
Yes, they like him. Do you want me to do the whole history lesson?
No.
Okay. He's going to do well. For everyone not named Mandela Barnes, what are they waiting for? If the dynamic doesn't change, Mandela will be the nominee. And so whether you're Joel Brennan, Missy Hughes, David Crowley, Kel DeRoyes, you got to start communicating with voters in a mass way through paid media. I am gobsmacked that we have not seen that yet.
You made a great point this morning about that, or maybe it was Bill. Like, if you don't do it now, there is no next month. You're not going to be...
You're running out of time. Yeah. It's getting late early.
I've been unimpressed with all of the campaigns, except for Francesca Hong. I think, at least on the social media, she's got game and has done really well. I would argue she is the front runner. My proof point are 3 consecutive Marquette Law School polls that show her in first place, albeit under 20% for sure. But that's noteworthy for a sitting lawmaker from Madison, Wisconsin, that she's in the lead. Mandela Barnes, if he were in the lead, as Joe points out, and I'm not saying he's not in the top tier, but if he were in the lead, he should be blowing the field away based on his advantages.
Yeah, to that point.
Hold on,
I
want to talk about the Marquette Law School poll.
Yeah, so all of a sudden you don't have faith in it?
Do you remember what the last poll in the Supreme Court race was?
30-22.
Chris Taylor, 23. Maria Lazar, 17.
6.
And that is when you were like, hey, maybe conservatives could get it. The scoreboard after that election was over was 60.1-39.8.
I think you'd acknowledge so it's harder to pull a spring race.
He was trying to do a statewide race with a statewide electorate. And he missed by 14 points the margin. And missed Taylor's number by 37 points. And on that track record and that poll, you're going to say that Francesca Hong, like, that's not a poll of primary voters. And this is my point. The reason we're talking about this is the Tom Tiffany campaign made a really smart play this week.
No question.
They wrote a memo that said, we should actually be really afraid of Francesca Hong. Because Tom Tiffany knows that his best chance of winning a general election is against Francesca Hong. And my friends at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, not once, but twice.
And his second best chance is Mandela Barnes. Bill, so I'm good either way.
Bill, we've been doing this for a while. How many times have we written a interested parties memo to try to generate a story and gotten 2 bites at the apple out of it?
Yeah.
This is an incredible play by the Tiffany campaign.
No question.
But that's what it is.
Okay.
It is a play.
If it's Barnes all the way, where's the data that he should be putting out to say, I'm the guy, let's go? Where's that information?
They know they are in first place.
So they're just so confident they don't have to worry about it.
But let me make the other point I was going to make. The other five who are not Barnes or Hong have run pathetic campaigns, in my opinion. There is there are 102 days until the primary. If you are sitting on your cash until July 1 or even June 15th, you have already lost. I've run statewide campaigns. I ran the most successful statewide campaign in the last 100 years in the state of Wisconsin. I know what I'm talking about. If you are sitting on your cash waiting to introduce yourself on June 15th, your campaign is already over. You just don't know it yet. If you have cash and you are at 1% or 3%, you should spend every dollar in May. Every dollar you have before the Democratic convention.
All right. Texter says Barnes is old news. Dems want new blood.
Well, I agree.
We'll find out at some point. Good luck, Fran Hong, I guess. Or Joel Brennan, or Missy Hughes, or David
New
Crowley.
Poll coming out in 2 weeks.
2 weeks!
I got my money on Franny.
I think we'll see numbers before then, and I think it'll actually be a Democratic primary poll.
Okay.
Ooh, a little news.
Hey, Joseph Teaser. Bill McCoskin, say something nice. Are they even capable of it today? We'll see. We'll find out after this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now.
Yeah, that is me raising my voice. One of the rare times I ever raise my voice or get excited about anything. I'm very calm.
You Sicilians are calm.
Yes, very reasonable.
It's in your DNA.
I think so, yes.
Me too. I never yell.
You're Polish. Yeah, for right. Sure.
The funny thing behind this, Joe comes in hot on a Friday usually, because mostly at me, not at you so much. But
you've
me.
Been on my nerves the last 2 weeks, man.
Sometimes it's on the text before we get here, so yeah. It depends.
As I say, I don't play in that sandbox as much as I used to because there's cat urine in there.
He unsubscribed.
It is polarizing. It is quite polarizing.
It's nasty sometimes. Downright nasty. All right, who wants to go first and say something nice?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm gonna. So Saturday night, I don't know why, but when the event happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I'm a Fox News guy. I've admitted that on the air. I went to CNN to watch their coverage. And I did the same thing when Trump was shot in Butler. I watched CNN all night. I did not watch Fox. I wanted to see how the other side was covering it, to see what kind of a story it was. And the guy that really impressed me on Saturday night was certainly not a Trump fan, Van Jones. Yeah. Van Jones was on a panel. He could not have handled it better that night about the magnitude of this, how important it was, why security measures need to be improved, sort of the state of our politics. I'm not sure I've ever agreed with Van Jones on anything, but on Saturday night, he handled it with the right style and tone to sort of calm things down if he was speaking only to the left. I think it was smart. And as someone from the right, I give him credit for that.
Yeah, he's actually a pretty smart guy.
Republican Senator Susan Collins of the great state of Maine.
Soon to be reelected.
That's a separate conversation. I don't have Nazis. Susan Collins is my say something nice this week. She became the first Republican to go against the administration and try to exert congressional authority over what is happening in Iran. There has long been a 60-day window in which the executive can wage a war. But if you read your constitution, and I have, only the Congress can declare
in my bag
war.
Right here.
And that didn't happen. So there is a war powers debate ramping up, heating up. There's been another vote. And Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, had the courage of her convictions to vote to uphold the Constitution and the War Powers Act of 1973. Good on you, Susan Collins.
And I'm going with Joel Brennan. I'm not going to vote for Joel Brennan. He's a Democrat. But I've talked to, I think, every candidate, maybe except one, including Tom Tiffany on the other side. It was a normal conversation I had with him the other day. And I am someone that's impressed by resume and experience. And he's got a pretty solid resume, worked for the state, I think Department of Administration and some other
secretary.
Yeah. I said to him, he might be, I do this for a living. I judge how people's communication skills are. To me, he's the best communicator in this field. I don't care which side you're talking about. I could ask him a question. It was a common sense, well thought out, well delivered answer. I need more of that. And you don't have to be blowing up the system, Fran Hong, or whatever, socialists want to do and transform and change everything and give everything away for free. Just a guy that has a business background and has done stuff and has led departments. I need more of that. Whatever side you're on, I need more of that. So I'm going to give some love to Joel Brennan. And you can find my interview with Joel Brennan. Here's my tease for the newsletter. At our newsletter, and you can just text the word extra, E-X-T-R-A. It sends you right there. And we revamped it. It's even better than it used to be. And if I see that neither one of you guys are subscribers, I'm going to kick you. You know what?
I'm not sure. I got to check.
Oh my God! After the break, grab bag.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right, gentlemen. On this Friday, fun Friday, first day of May. Yeah.
Yeah, May Day.
May Day, yeah.
It's going to be May.
All those workers.
Didn't get that May Day. Cut today.
Solidarity with all those workers out there. Yeah, I see they're parading across the streets of Milwaukee and the Milwaukee area.
Oh, in Madison, too.
Yeah.
Schools are closed.
Good job. Grab some coffee. It's cold out.
The kids can't read, but they're all protesting.
All right. You want you start. Grab bag.
All right. I'm going to change what I was going to do. So former UW System President Jay Rothman.
Yeah.
Was excused or asked to leave by the Board of Regents about a month ago. He penned an op-ed regarding corporate governance, which is his area of expertise as an attorney. The article itself makes several really, really good points that the Regents probably is too big. There's 18 members, that it's frankly too political. There aren't any specific criteria for being on other than patronage. If you're close to that administration, you get on. And it's been that way since it was created in the early 70s. I think he's right about those points. However, I think he was the wrong messenger. I don't think you can, you know, be shown the door by your board and then say your board's a train wreck. I think that would have been better coming from a former regent than someone who was asked to leave by the regents. But again, this is his area of expertise. They are very solid points. I encourage you to track it down. It was in the Wisconsin State Journal last Sunday. Jay Rothman, outgoing Board of Regents president.
All right.
Perhaps we could have qualifications and standards and not just make it about patronage for the president's cabinet first and then move on to the UW.
Get to yours and quit your bitching, Joe. Come on.
It's been a while since you did a rebuttal. I like that.
Yeah. We don't do rebuttals, by the way.
He does. Yeah. He does. There are no rules for
rebut Joe. This, Billy.
There are no rules.
Congratulations to all of the student athletes this week who are high schoolers across Wisconsin who are signing their commitment letters or celebrating the fact that they are going on to play college athletics. I was at one of those ceremonies earlier this week. I'm going to try to be at one later today for some of the young men who played football for us over the last 4 years at Whitnall, five of whom are going on to play sports in college, three of them football, one baseball.
It's not easy.
One basketball. It's not easy. And it's a great way to set yourself up for lifelong success. That is the importance of sports. And I think in a lot of the conversations that have been had, we're forgetting why sports matter. They matter because they teach kids resilience. They make them better people. They make them better teammates. And those are life skills that you need. And we can recognize that across the state, young men and women are continuing their athletic career as well as their academic careers, and I congratulate all of them.
No rebuttal needed on that one. Very good. Okay, mine is for the American Legion. My friend Steve Cockey from Oak Creek says, you know what, and these are numbers I didn't know. There's 331,000 veterans across the state of Wisconsin, 47,000 in Milwaukee County. That's a big number.
That's a very big number.
But here's the thing that people don't know about the Wisconsin American Legion. It is a group that helps veterans and their families. So I'm going to give it to you twice. WILegion.org. They have programs, services available for you or your family. It's veterans helping veterans, strengthening their lives. So if you know someone that is a veteran or needs assistance, reach out to them today. Don't wait. WILegion.org. Steve does a great job in that organization. He's represented our area in the state at the state level. I have so much love for veterans. My dad was an Air Force veteran. My brother Dave, Navy. I didn't serve, but boy, I have mad respect for those people. We could always do that. So even though it's not a specific Veterans Day, or they do great work. I'm a Sons of Legion member because of my dad. It is very, very important that we continue to help those people who always stand up for us when we need them.
Here.
All right, we got about a minute left. Let's talk about
I got one other grab bag.
Yeah.
Me too.
Make them quick.
Matt Smith's birthday is today.
No kidding.
Our Channel friend 12 Smith.
I think
director.
He's done a him and Jaron have done a phenomenal job with that
happy
show.
Happy birthday, Matthew.
Matt Smith.
I will
happy
be a Mike
birthday.
Boucher fan forever, but Jaron and Matt have really done a nice job with that show.
They have. And I've been on both versions, and they were both Goucher is a legend.
He's a legend.
Yeah. But Matt Smith, he's here every Monday morning.
Yeah.
Love that conversation. You know who he's got on this week? Former Governor Scott Walker.
Really?
Yeah. How about that? I saw that. I go, I'm interested in that conversation. What's he going to talk about?
So my second grab bag is the mayor of New York City, Zoran Mondale.
Oh, he got it under the wire.
He promised the moon. The warmth of collectivism is sort of cold, it turns out. He doesn't. He ran out of OPM, other people's money, and is now begging Albany to bail him out. 4 months in, Mondale's a complete failure.
Has he already come to support the Fran Hong campaign in Wisconsin? Has he already done a statewide tour?
No.
Is that going to happen?
I can't imagine it would.
All right, I got to kick you guys out.
Maybe.
Hey, after the break for news, really important conversation. We had a group of Eastern European journalists in the building. A journalist from Ukraine. It's 9 minutes. You want to hear what she had to say. Imagine doing that job. It's always a hard job in a war zone. That's coming up after the break. Every once in a while, we have traveling journalists who come into the studios here at WTMJ, and I heard that she was coming in. I said, we have to talk to her. She is Elena Steck, Ukrainian journalist, broadcaster. First of all, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
So as I've talked to you before the interview, I said, I feel for your country. We can't imagine what that feels like, but you're a journalist. You're a broadcaster. You are in that world. I mean, just on its basic sense, how can you do the job given that you're in that situation in your country?
Yeah, let me start with saying that I am a journalist and a host at Ukraine's public broadcaster. So I'm mainly based in Kyiv, Ukraine, which is the capital of Ukraine. So I'm not the one who do the frontline reporting all the time. I had a couple of trips, but it's not my everyday work. But, you know, when I'm being asked how it is to be a journalist in the country which is at war, it is always quite difficult to answer, because I think that many of my colleagues from Europe and the United States, they expect me to say that, you know, it is so difficult to provide balance or to follow some other ethical standards. But what I think, what comes in mind for me personally at first is some very personal things. For example, I think that you might have heard that we had a pretty difficult winter in terms of electricity and heating because of the Russian missile attacks. So it influences, first of all, my work, as well as my colleagues' work, because you cannot work from home. You don't have electricity. You go to the office. We are lucky to have a pretty stable electricity in our office, but still, if it is air raid alert, we need to go downstairs to the shelter. So all of that interrupts our job.
How often does that happen? Because we see the reports. There's missiles coming in all the time, drone attacks, all these things. How often does it happen where it disrupts not just your work life, but your home life?
Yeah, so I will not say that it happens like every day, but it happens regularly. I have this application on my phone. I follow when there are air raid alerts in Kyiv. So during the last couple of days, it's like twice, three times per day. It's pretty often. So for many of us, it means that we are preferred and recommended to go to the shelter, but we follow, like we can follow online what is the type of the missile attack. Is that drone attack or a missile? So how much time do we have? Is that ballistic missile? Then we don't have much time. So we decide if we see that we can stay at our workplaces, so we do this. But in general, like currently the situation with electricity is much better. So also I don't want to say that everything is bad. No, we manage. I don't know how, but the state and the providing companies, they managed to fix it pretty quickly. But in general, of course, we have this very personal dimension of what is going on. And also I think that what is important to mention that, you know, a part of Ukrainians, they are being a military serviceman. So a lot of these people, they used to be civil people, But a lot of me and my colleagues, we have families who are now military servicemen, so this also adds this personal dimension.
There's no way right now to be a Ukrainian citizen without being directly impacted by all of this, whether it's your home life, work life. Describe, we talked a little bit about, you know, the disruption with electricity and these bombings, but even things like food, and you were talking about heating your house, all of these things are disruptive. In the United States, we're involved in wars, but not on our own, in our own country. That's the country you're living and working in, and it's happening around you. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, yes, you're right that, well, I think that I should start with a very practical example that what we do when there is air raid alert and, for example, a ballistic or a drone attack on Kyiv. So we are at home sleeping. What do we do? So we have like two options. Okay, we have three options. One option, you can do nothing. You can because a lot of people, they got used to it and they're like, okay. So they're even, excuse me, becoming maybe a bit of fatalists. They're like, okay, so I'm staying. I don't want to go anywhere. Second option, which I use pretty often, I move to the hallway. You know, I have my yoga mat and a sleeping bag, right? Mm-hmm. How you say
yeah,
it,
yeah, yeah.
Which we use for hiking, yeah? So I put it on the floor, and I, like, this is how I sleep till the morning, because, like, we have this rule of two walls, if you are between two walls, so this may be a bit more safer for you. The third option, if there is, like, a huge attack, missile and drone, so I go like downstairs to find a shelter. It's not in my house, so I need to like take a couple of minutes to go to the shelter. So this is a very practical dimension. And what you mentioned about electricity, for example, keeping your products safe in your fridge. You know, if we had days when there were like, I don't know, like 8 hours without electricity. So you can imagine what may happen with your products. So a lot of Ukrainians already have, you know, this huge power banks, small power banks. I have power bank in my bag because I already got used to it that I need to be prepared for such a crisis moments.
This is a question. It's purely speculative, but how does this war end? I mean, we've been talking about it for a long time and we have a country that attacked your country for no reason, essentially. How does this war end?
Well, I would like to know, but I don't know. You know, from the very beginning of the full-scale war, Ukrainians and Ukrainian journalists, they asked their, for example, guests at the interviews, how do you see the end of the war? And I think that during 2022, 2023, like there were some expectations, but now it seems something that will take some time. And we already got used to it. I think that a lot of Ukrainians had huge expectations from Donald Trump because when he was campaigning, he mentioned that he will end the war in Ukraine in one day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you're right.
It was pretty obvious that it won't be so easy as he said, but at least we expected that he, as the president of the United States, could pressure Vladimir Putin to stop the war because he's the only person who is responsible for it and the only person truly who can stop it. But like what we see now, we see that U.S. president trying to make some kind of a deal, and there have been a lot of pressure to Ukraine, but not much pressure to Russia, at least as it is being, like, as we see it as observers from a side. So I think that the main thing that should be done is to put more pressure on Russia, because until it doesn't feel any consequences and doesn't feel that, for example, it feels lack of money. They don't. After the war against Iran in the Middle East, they have plenty of money again, so they can conduct war for a pretty long time. More so, like what we expect, but I don't know if we can hope that the pressure on Russia will increase. Because, like, you know, I just want to say that there are no other people in the world who would like to end this war as quickly as it's possible than Ukrainians. Trust me. so many people dead, so many people lost their homes, so many people were forced to flee the country. And like when we are being listened to the statement that like Ukraine is an obstacle for reaching peace deal, this is very painful because it's definitely not true.
Olena Steck, broadcaster from Ukraine, I'm in awe of you. I've only met you for about 20 minutes, but telling the story is important. I wish you and your countrymen in Ukraine the best, and I hope this war does end as soon as possible. Thanks for spending some time with me.
Thank you.
Think about that interview the next time you're complaining about how hard your life is. She's a journalist doing great work in a country that is being essentially bombed each and every day. Quick break.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
Every week, every Friday, producer Jazz. No, it doesn't just happen on Friday. The work is long and hard all week to put all the voices and stories that we covered here on 620 WTMJ together in one exciting package. Another assassination attempt, dangerous winds hit Milwaukee, letting the Beagles go, and more. It's the Weekend Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
From ABC News, President Trump and other top White House officials uninjured Saturday night after being whisked out of the White House Correspondents' Dinner when shots rang out.
We could hear not only the gunshots, but then smell the gunpowder.
Is it worth them traveling back to Washington? If not there, then where? And at what cost? And who pays that cost?
Harrison again winds and fires. Struck him out! He strikes out the side in the sixth at a new career high for Kyle Harrison. He's got a dozen strikeouts.
What's your grade for the draft?
I don't do draft grades. Draft grades are dumb. Ask me in 2 years.
Another reason why I like you.
Adam, what did you see in River West?
There are not just your typical twigs and branches down blocking some parts of roads. We're talking full 100 maybe year old plus trees uprooted, sent over, landing on people's vehicles.
Two different people that I trust and know said, Cruz disappeared about 8:30. If it is true, shame on you. How have we gotten worse at the customer service part? Everything is an extinction level event now.
This will be a historic speech. Congress has gathered at this very moment, waiting for an address by Britain's King Charles III.
Whatever disagreements we may have, we stand united in our commitment to uphold democracy.
Another indictment for James Comey.
This time about a picture of seashells on a North Carolina beach.
Constitutes as a threat against the president.
On the one hand, it's preposterous. On the other hand, the Justice Department is saying, give me a break. There are all kinds of assassination attempts against this guy.
The average price for a gallon of gas is creeping up to the $4 mark in Wisconsin. Meanwhile, President Trump continues to downplay the rising gas prices due to the war.
You know, there's nothing better than having a nice fresh soda when you go through a drive-thru.
Yes.
In Paddock Lake, they found on the McDonald's on 75th Street worms in their drinks.
What?
I was contemplating life. I've never had something that gross happen to me.
A kid getting stuck in one of those claw machine.
How could you not hear that he was in there?
Put your phone down and get your kid's head unstuck. How about that?
I'm never going to vote for Fran Hong, but I've met her. I like her. She's a fighter.
If it's Fran Hong versus Tom Tiffany, who
I still
would,
vote for Tiffany. I still
you'd vote
Tiffany.
For an election denier like Tiffany?
I hate the fact that he did that. But if you give me a socialist versus Tom Tiffany, I'm taking Tiffany.
That surprises me.
This is a major development surrounding the controversial breeding and research facility in Dane County.
We are very excited about these animals having an opportunity to touch soil and grass, breathe fresh air, and get into a loving home.
Swing and a miss, and it's time to high five. This ball game over. The Brewers emphatically take 2 out of 3 from Arizona.
Brandon Woodruff left the game in the second inning after just 21 pitches and showing reduced velocity.
It wasn't like he was injured. He knows himself pretty well. He's been through too much.
It will be the 152nd renewal of the greatest 2 minutes in sports. We don't know much about horse racing, but we do know cool names when we see them.
Chief Wallaby? I love it.
What a week, eh?
What a week.
You got what I mean.
I was contemplating life.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
The Weekend Review, sponsored by Outdoor Living Unlimited. I'll wrap this week's Kristenless show. She'll be back on Monday after this. I won't make you play it all the way through. Somebody asked me, so I'll tell you how I got that interview. So we have these traveling journalists visit WTMJ every year. Last year was the continent of Africa. This year, Eastern Europe. I was involved in the actual meetings last year, and we kind of rotate amongst the town here. But I said, I saw a Ukrainian journalist, Olena Steck. I said, we have to talk to her. And I didn't realize until I listened back, and thanks to Jazz for putting that together, the emotion in her voice. Imagine you don't even know your sleep life. She's doing her job in the environment of all of the uncertainty, bombings, drone attacks, power outages. So I have mad respect for what those group of journalists are dealing with in the country of Ukraine. And if you missed it, you can find it on our podcast page. But Jazz and our team here will put that interview on our newsletter, which will come out Sunday morning. So we'll link to that interview. I encourage you to listen to it. Thanks for all the kind words, by the way. People were texting me. Kristen will be back on Monday. She's had a very busy week, even though she was on vacation, sort of wink, wink, nod, nod vacation. Lots to talk about, including, I mentioned it before, Matt Smith joins us in the 9 o'clock hour. Scott Walker, former governor of the state of Wisconsin, is one of his guests. We'll certainly talk about that. Who knows what's going to happen over the weekend? The news is here for us to deliver. I am proud to be an employee of GKB and WTMJ. It's been a fantastic week. Thanks to all of you for being part of that. We have the midday show with Greg and Jessica. And if you have not heard Jessica's coverage of the Ridgeland Farm story, check it out on WTMJ.com. There's great reporters all over our lineup here. That is some of the best reporting I've ever heard at WTMJ. So congrats to Jessica Tai on all those stories. I'm sure she'll talk about it again today. The news is next on 620 WTMJ.